Late night television, once a cornerstone of American entertainment, is facing a dramatic decline, once defined by cultural icons like Johnny Carson and David Letterman. The format now competes with streaming, social media, and changing viewer habits. Audiences no longer wait until 11:30 p.m. for monologues or celebrity interviews. They can get that content instantly online. As networks reassess their priorities, late night's downfall signals a broader transformation in how we consume comedy and commentary. The subject came front and center as it was announced on July 17th by CBS that The Late Show with Stephen Colbert was being canceled.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And yeah, I share your feelings. It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
It comes as other flagship programs are struggling financially. The era of traditional late night talk shows appears to be ending, or at least changing. Bill Carter has written about the television industry for 40 years, mostly at the New York Times, where he was the chief television correspondent for 26 years. He's the author of four books, including the legendary The Late Shift, which spawned the HBO original movie of the same name, and a 2010 follow-up, The War for Late Night. He currently is editor-at-large at latenighter.com, and it's a pleasure to welcome Bill Carter back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Glad to be here.
First of all, in my introduction, how much of what we see of what happened with Stephen Colbert, of that cancellation, do we take for face value that it was a money decision and that late night is hemorrhaging cash?
I think we can take pretty much all of it that it's losing money. I don't know if it's hemorrhaging cash. I don't think I could take any of it at face value that was only an economic decision, because of the timing of it, because of the political background of it. There's just too much there to just swallow that it's just all of a sudden we have to make this financial decision, but we actually don't have to take them off the air for another basically 10 months. So it was a very unusual framing of the decision. And I think everybody who has observed how much Colbert irritates President Trump, and because a deal was in the works that Trump had to approve, has to at least say, well, that should be considered along with the potential financial problems.
When you think of it, of the show no longer being on the air, and Colbert said this when he made the announcement, that this is all going away. That it's not just we're taking Colbert off the air. This all is going away. And I found that to be the most chilling part.
Well, yes, because this is a franchise that David Letterman started 30 years ago. And obviously CBS had tried forever to get a late night franchise, forever. And then Letterman gave them one. And Colbert came in and wound up being the number one rated show in terms of viewers. And has done it for 10 years. And then they say, well, it's losing money. We're just going to close the whole thing up. It does speak to the whole problem of linear television, which is that, as you noted, people don't watch the same way. They don't have to stay up till 11:30 to see this. If they want to see Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Kimmel or Jon Stewart or whoever, they can go the next day on YouTube and see the parts they like, which is the way people tend to watch television now, in much bigger numbers than much linear television. It was kind of interesting, the number of people that still do watch it live. I think Colbert had like about 2.5 million viewers a night.
Right.
Which in the old days would have sounded very small, but in the current world of network television is pretty good, actually. It's pretty good, especially if you take four shows a week. Okay, if you take four shows a week, that's 10 million viewers, right? Assuming that obviously many would be duplicative, but so it isn't a non consequential audience. There's something there, and there has been something there. The question of the finances have come up before, but I mean, if somebody said to them, you know, your football package is losing X amount of money, they'd figure a way to work around that. You know what I mean? They'd figure they have to keep that.
You make this point in your reporting that there was no attempt made that we know of in the sense of, well, let's tinker with this, let's tinker with that, let's work on this, let's move things around. It was just, okay, you're done.
Yeah.
Which adds to the suspicion that there was more to this than the cash aspect of it.
Well, look what happened, for example, at Seth Meyers, who was in the other franchise David Letterman created, Late Night. They got rid of his band. Okay, that was an expense. They got rid of his band. They pared the show down. The Daily Show has never had a band, for example. So there's something you can eliminate and still have a late night show. Jimmy Fallon, they took away one night of his show. It's only four nights a week. It used to be five nights a week. Moves were made that were economic. CBS did not seem to make any significant economic move. They just dropped the whole thing. And something else is very interesting. They had a show that followed Colbert called After Midnight that was on for a season, basically. And Taylor Tomlinson, the host of the show, was pretty popular. And for Late Night, it was attracting a somewhat younger audience. And CBS actually renewed the show for another year. They renewed that show for another year a few months ago. Tomlinson said she didn't want to do it anymore.
I never thought that I would be able to host a late night show. This was never something that was on my vision board at all because I just didn't think it was possible for me. Like, I'm a touring stand-up and I feel very grateful to have that career that I do. And this opportunity came along at a time in my life where I could take advantage of it. And while unfortunately I couldn't keep doing the show, it just wasn't sustainable for me. I can't believe that I got to do it as long as I did. And yeah.
Because she prefers to go on the road to do her comedy. They didn't attempt to replace her. They just dropped it, but they were going to keep it on. They had, if she had said yes, they were going to keep that show on. Now they've abandoned the entire late night landscape. So something else changed. It seems like you could guess or surmise that something else changed. And the something else that was changing was the ownership of CBS. That was changing. And the new ownership happens to be friendly with Mr. Trump. And his wishes may have come into play. You know, he may not have had to say, I don't like this guy, get rid of him. Just sort of the Henry II line, who will rid me of this troublesome late night host, turbulent late night host, you know? And someone decided to take care of that. That could be guessed at least. And no one's going to be able to prove it because, you know, all of this was done in the background. But it's open to speculation and for people to just shrug it off. Say, I was losing money. You got to get rid of him. The evidence says there was more going on.
Late Nighter writes about the fact that The Daily Show is on hiatus for 5 weeks and, yes. And questioning the timing of that. They said, you know, don't worry about it. Although, you know, you do wonder, and they said it had been planned for a while, although you wonder why they didn't sort of come out ahead of it. I'm curious about that aspect of it, too.
Well, you have every right to be because that's the same ownership.
Right.
That show is owned by
Paramount. Yeah.
It's owned by Paramount. So Paramount has now been taken over by Skydance. However, they do have done this before. I don't think they've done 5 weeks before, but they've taken a substantial chunk of time before. That is not unusual. Jimmy Kimmel takes the summer off. That's not unusual. So, but coming as it does right after they eliminated Colbert, it would naturally make people curious. They're off for 5 weeks. Are they ever coming back? You know, that would pop into some people's minds. And that's why Desi Lydic, who was on, who's hosting the show, said, you know, folks, we are coming back. Don't panic. We are coming back. And I will say, I think The Daily Show is in a more interesting position for this reason. If they decide to drop that because they don't like Jon Stewart, for example, well, The Daily Show is a franchise that does not have to exist on Comedy Central. Comedy Central, by the way, has virtually no original program. They have South Park, which does great, and a few other things. But basically, and Jon Stewart often makes this comment, we're all they got. Like, you know,
right.
So,
right.
So if you're going to try to keep that alive, you would be silly to drop The Daily Show because The Daily Show could run right off to a streamer. It could go right to Netflix. It could go right to somebody else. And they could do The Daily Show. That I believe, would exist going forward no matter what happens because it's too valuable a franchise. It's, you know, it's a nightly commentary in a news format that isn't crazy expensive. And I can't see that just going away. So I feel that would be very foolish of them to do that. You can make a case that dropping Colbert may have saved them money in some fashion. It also really eliminated what I think is the face of the network. Who else is the bigger star on CBS than Colbert? Like, at this point in time, nobody is. But you know, they can make that case. I don't think you can make a case that dropping The Daily Show is a good economic decision. I think that'd be very dumb.
Bill Carter is our guest. We're talking about late night, and it's a pleasure to have Bill with us. When you talk about what's going to go in that slot, and it's interesting to me because, I mean, you could show Equalizer reruns, and but you've given up at that point, right? I mean, you're not going to be making any major money.
Well, here's the other interesting thing that's going on here. Again, before this decision was made, after the Taylor Tomlinson exit, CBS announced that it had sold the time, the 12:30 p.m. time slot, to Byron Allen.
Right.
And Byron Allen, who was a stand-up comedian in his youth and has gone on to be sort of a ambitious entrepreneur sort, and has done a lot of business in buying time and putting on shows, created this show called Comics Unleashed years ago. And he did, three seasons of it or something. And he's been selling it ever since without doing new ones. He just buys time. I shouldn't say sells it. He buys time from a network or a syndicator or somebody, and then sells time to advertisers. So CBS announced they had sold this hour, sold it to Byron Allen. So he can now put on Comics Unleashed and sell the ad time, which is an old throwback to the way TV used to be, that the advertisers are controlling the show or are buying the show. And he must have been doing okay with it because he managed to put up whatever CBS asked. Now, that deal is still in place. So technically, he could be the 11:30 show now because that time period's open. And at first, I wondered if Byron was actually going to do any new shows or just keep rerunning these 10-year-old shows, which are completely non-topical. Well, they're completely non-topical jokes, right? So... But he has now announced he's going to do, I think he said, 130 original shows, okay, with comics. Now, they will probably mention Trump, for example, because I think Byron wants to do kind of evergreen shows, which can be shown in the future without people saying, wait a minute, why are they talking about the flood in Texas? That was 3 years ago. You know what I mean? They won't be doing that sort of topical stuff, but they're going to do something in late night. That deal exists and is going forward.
All right, welcome back to Comics Unleashed. So how do you like to kill time on the road?
Just by, like, thinking about a lot of things, pretty much. Like, I was thinking the other day that I want to start my own emergency rescue service called Rescue 911. And our motto would be, you really can't help but call us first. Simple deal, man.
So CBS won't own it. They just turned it over to an independent producer to put on a show. And it'll be different. And I'm sure Trump won't have any problem with it. And Skydance won't have any problem with it. So maybe it'll be on the air for a while. I don't know. It does mean that they are going to have something in that time period that isn't the Equalizer.
What do we lose, do you think, as a culture with the loss of these late night comedians?
Well, if we go all the way to the point of saying they're all wiped out, right? You know, I think we lose a nightly comic observation on our times, which is really what It goes back to the beginning. Steve Allen did it a little bit, not as topical, but obviously Johnny Carson did a monologue every night, and it was really based on the news. I mean, I've interviewed the writers for the show going back to Carson, and they would say, we would walk into the office at 9 o'clock in the morning. The first thing we did was read every newspaper, and we would look for stories because that was the basis of our jokes. And it was a commentary on what was going on in America. And Carson was not an outspoken advocate of a point of view, really, but he would skewer anybody. He didn't back off by saying, oh, Ronald Reagan's a friend of mine. I'm not going to make jokes about it. No, that was his job. He was a video political cartoonist. That's what he was. In his monologue, he did political cartoons, essentially. The absurdity, the craziness, the things that didn't make sense. He skewered them. That was his job. Losing that is a cultural impact, but it also is kind of a free speech impact because we're losing it because somebody doesn't like it. It makes them annoyed. He wants to put it down. He wants to somehow mute it. That is un-American. That's just terrible. If that has anything to do with the reason, and Trump has been all over the place on that. He was kind of gleeful and sort of taking credit. And then I think someone must have said, you know, you don't want to take credit. That looks like you're interfering with the First Amendment. And he said, I have nothing to do with it. It's all about money. And they were very unfunny and all that kind of stuff. But he was on a campaign to get rid of them. And he said he's on a campaign to get rid of Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. So,
and he puts pressure on these networks. He appointed an FCC chief, okay, who could not be more of a quote-unquote loyalist. And you could use other words for that. This guy, before he was FCC chief, went around with a lapel pin that was Trump's head. Okay. Now he's the head of the FCC. And his whole thing is, you know, if we don't like what you're doing, we can challenge your broadcast licenses. He was making those threats, you know, and obviously he's now talking about continuing this. You know, we have to monitor these shows and see what they're saying. You know, what does that sound like? That sounds like Russia or someplace. You know, the government's not supposed to monitor what, you know, the free press or the free entertainment world is doing. So that we would lose something huge if we are prevented from having, you know, an outspoken critic of the president have a platform.
Bill Carter is our guest. We're talking about late night television. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Bill Carter is our guest. He's written about the television industry for over 40 years, best known for his bestseller, The Late Shift. And really, that was the buildup of the late night wars. Of course, there was Johnny Carson, and it was just Johnny Carson. Before that, it was just The Tonight Show. You had Jack Paar, Steve Allen, and then Johnny Carson. So you look at the replacement, if you will, of that mantle of Carson, and then all hell breaks loose that you wrote about. Did you have any sense at the time of leading up to the retirement of Johnny Carson that was going to explode the way that it did?
Not in any deep fashion. I mean, I think everybody wondered about it because David Letterman had put on a show at 12:30 and become a phenomenon.
Yes.
And was expected to be able to slide into that role. And I think most people thought he must have a deal to get that job. Because if he, you know, if had any kind of agent at all, when they were renewing his contract, you would say, okay, he wants The Tonight Show when Johnny leaves. And they say, oh, absolutely. And they put in a big, huge penalty if he didn't get it. But in the meantime, they, you know, Johnny took off a lot of nights. He took off Monday night regularly. And he created a guest host thing, which was first Joan Rivers. And then when that went away, it was Jay Leno. And Jay Leno did very well as the replacement. So now you did have Jay Leno hanging in the background. But that created the problem of these other networks that didn't ever have a chance to do a late night show, which, by the way, made a fortune for NBC at the time. Over $100 million a year on the show alone, Carson show alone. So if you're CBS or ABC and you're looking at this, you're like, we need a guy like this. So NBC now has two of them. And CBS made a run at Leno first. They just NBC decided, we have Dave under contract. continuing for another couple of years if Johnny, when Johnny quits. So we can give it to Leno and keep Dave where he is. And they made this calculation, but they essentially had two guys for one seat. It was like musical chairs, right? Like,
right.
Can't both sit in the seat when the music stops. And that created an enormous amount of attention. I mean, they were, that's the thing about them. They were huge national celebrities at the time. It would be rare to find somebody in the country who had not seen one of them, you know, at some point. They knew who they were. Their lives were being covered. I mean, Letterman's of various things of being stopped for speeding and having a lady break into his house and all that. Those were huge cultural stories being talked about. So they were really front of mind. And for me, as a covering it as a newspaper guy, I kept writing about it. And the sources behind the scenes are saying, you have no idea what else is going on here. Like, and I really learned from that. If you are a daily journalist, you get the daily stuff, which is about 10% of what's going on.
Sure.
And then to get the other 90%, you have to dive very deep. And that's basically what happened for me to write that book.
When Letterman was denied the Tonight Show, and then you write that NBC had second thoughts about that and sort of made it a deal. And I believe it was Peter LaSalle who went to Letterman and said, look, this isn't the Tonight Show. This is not what the Tonight Show is. They're offering you something else. And that was ultimately what spurred him to say, okay, I'll look at other offers.
What really happened was the head of NBC at the time, Bob Wright, is a guy who had second thoughts. He was like, you know, this Letterman is really good. Yeah. Why are you letting him walk out the door? You know, why do you let a star like this walk out the door? So he hadn't signed his CBS deal. So they had, because they had him under contract for another, I don't know how many months at that point. So he agreed to CBS, but they could still keep him if they made a last minute thing. And they made a last minute offer to him, but it was a weird last minute offer because they said, you'll get the Tonight Show at the end of Jay's contract, which was like 9 months later. So you have to stay at 12:30 for 9 months, but you'll get the Tonight Show then. And Peter LaSalle said to him, they'll never do it. If Jay's doing well, they'll never do it. This is a way to keep you from going to CBS. And Dave wanted the Tonight Show so badly. He said, I don't care. This is what I want. This is what I want. And LaSalle couldn't convince him. So who did he get to convince him? Johnny Carson. He got Carson on the phone. And Carson said to Dave, I don't want to get in the middle of this, you know, but I think that deal, I don't know. And Johnny said, I need help. And he basically said, what would you do, Johnny? And then Johnny said, I'd walk.
We'll get a good show to David Letterman is with us tonight. Yeah. I want to point out something. When we come back from the commercial, if Letterman is sitting at the desk, and says I've stepped down for health reasons, don't believe him. I like David Letterman. I told David, I said, he'd have gotten the job if he'd have just scored higher in the swimsuit competition.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And believe me, none of that, absolutely none of that had been written. None of that had been written. And when I'm writing that book, and I hear this, I'm like, oh my God, this is unreal. People didn't know this.
And you didn't even get to the, we didn't even get to the part of Jay Leno hiding in the closet. But
yes.
this is an incredible story. But what I'm fascinated about too, I was reading, you had a piece the other day about the 30th anniversary of Leno talking to Hugh Grant, which was widely seen as the big turnaround, because when Letterman went on CBS, he made an incredible splash. He was king of the hill for 2 years. And then there was this moment, the way the story is written is that the moment comes when Jay Leno says to Hugh Grant, what the hell were you thinking? And the ratings just turn on a dime.
Let me start with question number one. What the hell were you thinking?
Oh, I don't say that. I don't say that to be glib, but I think among most people going, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I never wrote that because that isn't what happened.
Well, no, I know, but that's the story. But you write about it. You write about it in this, in looking at the 30th anniversary, because it really, even Leno didn't see it that way.
No, because what was going on was that Dave killed him for 2 years, but CBS was horribly mismanaged at the time. Lawrence Tisch owned the network, and he was sort of a tightwad, and. They lost the NFL franchise. They lost the NFL because they got outbid by Fox. They had right of refusal. You can't blow that deal, but they blew the deal. And then because they had the NFL, Fox, this network, which was only on like UHF stations in a lot of cities, they raided the CBS affiliates in big markets to get football. And so instead of being on, you know, Channel 7 in Detroit or something, he's on Channel 56 on Letterman. So his ratings were definitely sliding before this happened. And Jay had finally listened to some advice and was getting better and was figuring it out better. He got rid of his crazy manager and all of that. So all this came together. And the fact that the Hugh Grant thing was huge meant a much bigger audience watched that night, and a lot of them stuck with him. So it was a last peg on the board that changed the thing.
What I find so interesting is it was a ratings leader, and then he did that show for so – Leno did that show for so long, and then there was the moving to 10 o'clock and the Conan disaster, and you think they would have learned their lesson, and none of that happened. But even now, Letterman is still so revered. Those moments are on YouTube or are all over the internet, and you don't see much of Leno at all, in the sense of that material really didn't hold up. And even finding a 1 hour best of special of Leno is difficult because it was so different in the sense of being compared to Letterman.
Well, it's two things about that. One is that Jay did topical. That's what he did. He's a guy, his nightly monologue was the news. And it's very hard to make that relevant 30 years later. Thing about Carson was he did that too, but he had all the rest of it. You know, he had his own characters. He had, you know, crazy guest stuff that happened and all of that. Dave brought this creative approach to the show, you know, which he started in late night, with the partnership of Meryl Marco, who was brilliant head writer, and his then girlfriend. They created a lot of original, very original ideas for comedy, comedy concepts more than jokes. And that was a breakthrough. And Letterman's style was like that. He was more creative. He was more witty than he was big funny like that. He wasn't looking for just to tell a joke. He was looking for something that was really original and funny. And that continues, that plays well. And he's given credit because of his creativity. And frankly, in the comedy world, Letterman was the guy for young comics growing up. You talk to anybody who's the next generation of comic from Dave. Dave's now 78 years old. So you talk about guys in their 50s, right? Who grew up 50s and 60s, you know, Kimmel and Conan and all those guys. Dave was the guy. He was their guy, and they revered him for his creativity. And Jay was a working comic. That's what he was. He was a working comic, and they sort of thought anybody can do what Jay's doing. Anybody can. Now, Jay did it very well, and even Dave respected enormously his stand-up ability. But it was a completely different approach, and it doesn't play long-term because it didn't add to the genre in a special way. You know what I mean? Like, Letterman and to be fair, Conan really added to the genre by doing stuff that nobody had done before that was kind of crazy. Well, Steve Allen kind of did some, but you know what I mean? He wasn't just set up joke. It was something different. And I think Jay is kind of aware of it, but he also knows that was what made him win, right? And he was so interested in winning. You know, that's what he was about.
You say he was aware of it, and I was struck by the comments that he made recently about Colbert's firing and saying that he doesn't know why somebody would last if they were going to just do political material, which, as you already have indicated, I mean, he was doing the news for so long. That was his show. That was his monologue. However, of taking a side, and he said, why would you kill half the audience and why wouldn't you be more open? And I thought that was really interesting. And of course, he's taken some heat from many comics for those comments.
Well, it's an interesting thing because that's not Jay's original idea. That was Johnny's idea. Don't kill half the audience. Johnny. Yep. But Johnny was like, who's ever in power, you go after. You go after power. You don't go after party. You don't go after individual. You go after power. Who's in power deserves to be skewered. And what really changed the game was Trump, because Trump being in power just created so much outrageousness separate from politics, even, you know, really bizarre things that were funny in themselves, you know, injecting bleach and all crazy things that any comic would make fun of. And, you know, if Jay was in the seat when all that was going on with Trump, he would have done all that. Of course he would have. You can't give the public pablum. It'll be interesting because Byron Allen sounds like he is going to try to just do generic jokes. Why would you want to see that? I mean, that's like,
right.
I don't think that is compelling. Now, it was always compelling if a person just did really satirical stuff. Saturday Night Live comes on, they kill who's ever the president, right? They kill them, right? Clinton was killed by them. Trump is killed by them. You have to do it. That's what your job is, really. But Trump has raised the game because he doesn't take it well. He goes after, he comes back and goes after them. I mean, the president is supposed to be above this, supposed to kind of accept this. This is part of the job. You're in power, you get satirized. That's going to happen. But he doesn't accept that and is brutally angry about it usually. And he has now gotten all the power in the world, so he can sort of stomp on their heads with it. But it's, you know, I think that's what's different. I mean, if you're a comic in this era, and there's a guy who on Fox who is their comic, you know,
Greg Gutfeld,
and he talks about how well he doesn't. Frankly, okay, he's not really a late night comic doing both sides, is he? No, he's completely in the tank for Trump. He's in the tank for Trump. He went after Biden just as hard as they go after Trump. Biden didn't want to take away Fox's program license. Like, he's on cable, but, you know, he didn't want to interfere with, he didn't say, right, to get that guy off the air. It's part of the game. You know, that's more being a polemicist, I think, than a satirist. But, you know, I just think you have to accept that if this is a format that people like, they like it because they don't bow to anybody. Comics are respected when they don't bow down. You know, Jimmy Fallon had a problem because he looked like he was sucking up to Trump, right? And Jimmy, right, who's a good guy, that's his way of, you know, approaching the job. He just thought it was fun. And I know Jimmy, and I've talked to Jimmy a lot, and that hurt him. You know, he was damaged by that because people are like, how do you, it's right in the middle of a race and you make, you know, you're mussing his hair. And he, and I talked about it, and I said, you know, you would have had, I think, no issue if before you must his hair, you asked like three really tough questions in an interview. If you really, you know, approached it like, let's talk about this, let's talk about that, and then let's do the hair. I think that's fine. You know, you can play with the guy, but you have to at least show, hey, I'm a comic. I come after you. This is my job. Anyway, I just think the public respects that. That's one of the things they respect enormously about Letterman. You know, he went after his managers, he went after the NBC, he went after everybody. You know, he didn't back off to anybody.
And I think that's where so much of the respect comes from, right? I mean, and you wrote a great piece, just I think the last piece you wrote for Late Nighter was about, here's a guy who's in his late 70s. He retired. If I had to put money on this, Bill, at the time when he retired, I would have said he was going to do a Carson and you'd never see him again. He was going right. to go out to his ranch in Montana and you'd never see him again. But here is a guy who likes to be on television, and yes. he goes out and he's really good at it. Yes. And he's very choosy about where he goes. He does have his own show on Netflix in addition to that. He does a lot of live events where he'll interview people. It's something he really enjoys.
Yes. Well, one of the things that stood out to me when I wrote the book, and I didn't know the guy much until I started writing the book, was people who knew him said, you know, he's a bit of a socially awkward guy outside the show. But on the show, he is a different character. And he said to me, the only time I ever really feel alive is that 1 hour every day.
Yeah.
That's when I'm alive. And I thought, why would you stop? That's the thing that made him live. He lived for the thing. So I, with you, thought he might at first go away. And then I thought, no, he will not. He needs this. It's what feeds him. And you see it when he goes on. You know, he was on with Busy Phillips on a QVC show, right?
I remember the time I was on a college tour with my son, and I tripped over a scooter and knocked myself out on the cement.
Oh, my God.
I was out cold. I come to in a pool of blood, and there's a group like this standing around me.
Oh, no.
I have no idea how long
Poor
I was
Poor Harry.
Yeah. So Harry's line was, yeah, I knew it was you when I heard the sirens.
No.
So the ambulance shows up. Harry and I get in the damn ambulance. I've never been in an ambulance, never been knocked out. We're on our way to the emergency room, and I hear the guy controlling the ambulance say, yeah, we just picked him up. It's a 76-year-old man, knocked himself unconscious. And I said, oh, that poor bastard, he must be, oh, that's me.
But he was great. He was just so great. You know, he just knows how to do it. He was always a great guest before he, you know, was a great guest on Carson. So he has that skill. Why bury that skill? You know, it's not a skill that you can't do anymore, like, you know, throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You can still go out and be funny.
We talk about the future of late night, and this is going back to the spring of this year, but you look at the John Mulaney show on Netflix, a show that is odd, and I love it, but it's quirky and weird, and in the way that Letterman's show was at the beginning, and Conan too, for that matter, and there comes Dave out on the show and is being measured by John Mulaney.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. The whole thing of it is brilliant.
What do you got, bud?
I'm at 72 inches. Would you call that the top?
Yeah, I think so.
You are 6 feet and 1/2 inch.
That bit is such a Letterman bit, right?
Yes.
It's such a Letterman bit. We're going to measure everybody. I mean, there's nothing funny about that until you put a really funny guy in the middle of it. Then it's funny.
And it seems like, obviously, Mulaney's enjoying it. Letterman is enjoying it. And then you posit the question, okay, but is this what this form is going to become? And did that show even find its audience? We don't know. We don't even know if it's been renewed yet.
It hasn't been renewed yet. And it made a lot of noise. Didn't have a heck of a lot of viewers, is what I've been told. Netflix likes noise, though. So that is a positive. I don't know that John necessarily wants to do it, because what's changing for comics is that in the past, if you were a stand-up, you made a pretty good living, but you had to go around the country a lot. And a lot of guys decided, you know, what I really want to do is I want to do stand-up in my 20s, let's say. And then I want a sitcom or I want a late-night show. That's what the guys really wanted. And you saw that in that generation. But now, Taylor Tomlinson walked away from a late-night show because she can make so much money on the road. A lot of these comics are making enormous amounts of money on the road. And Mulaney is a big act. He fills a big arena. He doesn't really need this show. It might be better in his life. He has another very young child now. He's not a guy particularly, I think, needs to be on his own on the road, given his past dalliances with drugs, etc. And I like John a lot, by the way. So he might want this, but a lot of these guys don't want, that isn't their goal anymore. Their goal is to get really big as a stand-up and play, you know, a 14,000 seat place, you know, and spend two-thirds of the year on the road and make a boodle. It's different. And because then you do Netflix specials and you have YouTube, and so you do get exposure that way. You're not just in a club. So a lot of these guys are less interested in that than they used to be. Now, it was interesting. I wrote another piece. It was interesting that The Daily Show is running substitute hosts every week, right?
Right.
And clearly there's a bit of a tryout thing going on there, because I don't know. I think John now is more likely to want to stay because Trump is going after him so much. But, you know, John is still, to me, an icon. He's a giant in the business. He's a giant in late night. But it's very interesting because they have these other guys, all of whom are pretty good. I think they're all good. The writing's always good. But they had Josh Johnson on, right?
Right.
That's 2 weeks ago or something. There's a young guy who does a lot of YouTube. So he does like a fresh set in New York almost every night and tapes it and puts it on YouTube. And he's got a big following YouTube. He made a big splash on The Daily Show. He got bigger numbers than Stewart, okay? And I'm sitting there saying, well, this guy is a generational guy who in the past would get a late night show like that. They'd snap him up now. The question is, what happens? Does he do that? Do you build a show around him? Does he want that? It's a kind of a different era. And you got to say, they need somebody young because these other guys are in their 50s and 60s. John's in his 60s.
There was an article in the New York Times right after the cancellation of Colbert that basically said that this is bad for late night, but it's great for Colbert. Given what we're talking about, you wonder where somebody who doesn't have the stand-up background, he was an improv guy, and to then come into it, you do wonder what the next step is going to be.
Yeah. I still think, as I mentioned earlier about The Daily Show, the format is fantastic. I mean, the format is fantastic. You know, you have some very talented comedian with writers, and they talk about what's going on in America in a funny way, and it makes people laugh. I think the format is almost the best comic format ever invented. However, people don't watch TV this way anymore. So you could see it being on Netflix, for example, and people saying, you know, I watched three nights of Josh Johnson this way. I watched three episodes in a row, like, instead of watching every night. It's hard to say. I mean, but the other thing you have to remember is that when all of this started, Steve Allen did it, and Jack Parr did it, and Carson did it, and there were little fringe things like Merv Griffin, you know, on the side.
Gavitt.
But nobody ever seriously competed until Letterman went to CBS. Nobody ever did. But once he did, the thing exploded. You had, you know, Arsenio, and you had Kimmel, and you had, you know, all these late night guys, and you had The Daily Show, and you had The Colbert Report. You had, at one point, you had nine shows, I believe. And that divides the audience. What if you only had one again? What if there only was one again? Would that still draw an audience that loses money? If the guy was really good, and he had a hot following. Like, the other thing is, Letterman had a following. Conan had a real following. You know, people really wanted to see Conan. Young people. That kind of person should still exist. They should be able to find that kind of person again. And if he was the only one on, I think he'd probably do really well.
What I loved about Letterman, and what I love even now about Mulaney, is the reverence that they have. Kimmel has this. Many of these comedians do. The reverence that they have, that there isn't such the war aspect, that they have great reverence for each other. They have great reverence. I mean, you saw that when Colbert got canceled, they all came together. But even looking at of how the Letterman show developed, you certainly saw Steve Allen in there. You saw Jack Parr in there. You saw Ernie Kovacs in there. There was a lot going on, and you see that now in shows like Mulaney's show, where you see Letterman, certainly Conan.
Yes, I will. I want to point something out. Colbert does not do that stuff.
No.
He doesn't do it. And I think that's been a mistake myself. I think he does a monologue usually, and maybe he does a desk piece, but not much after that. And so he's not adding to the genre. Like Dave really added to the genre, and Conan really added to the genre, and the Daily Show really added to the genre. And I didn't see that with Colbert, who I think is amazing how he became a stand-up, because he's great at that. But the Colbert Report was absolute genius. That was genius what he did there. He did a sketch for 9 years. He did a sketch. I mean, he was doing a character. That was brilliant. When that show was funny, it was on the floor funny. That show could be so funny. But it, because it was original. And I feel like the format needs to be kicked in the butt. You know, like, you got to do that. You got to be Letterman a little bit. You got to be Conan a little bit. Stir it up instead of just doing a monologue. And I think Fallon, interestingly, did some of that early. When he was on Late Night, he did a lot of stuff, you know, slow jamming the news and
right.
I'm Dancing with Michelle Obama. And he did more of that. Now he just does games, which I don't think are creative, you know. I think you need that to now break out and to make the show talked about. The other interesting guess I would have is that if you did the show live, actually live, you might shake it up a little bit. Saturday Night Live, that live thing is really important. It still does really well, that show. You know, it would be worth trying. Anyway, I do think you need to have that fresh, something fresh about it. But I don't think it means nobody can do that. Somebody could do that. And if the Tonight Show was the last show standing and you had some really breakout host, I think you'd make a lot of noise.
Well, it's a fascinating thing to discuss and look at, and we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, we still have, 9-10 months of Colbert. That should be very interesting to watch.
I think it will be. And we'll see what happens toward the end. It'll be very interesting.
Bill Carter, hey, you are just terrific. I have enjoyed your work for so long, and it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. If people are not aware of Late Nighter, it's a Bible for all of us who love this art form. And you can go to latenighter.com. You're the editor at large, and it tells you everything you need to know about what's going on in Late Night. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.